Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Shavuot Tov. On behalf of Torah Moshe, I want to welcome everybody to part two of our series on Halacha and Human Relations with Rav Daniel Feldman, broadcast live from Teaneck, New Jersey, to around the world. And a pleasure. Today we're going to discuss, easy topic in theory, perhaps a lot harder in practice, dan l'kavzchut, to judge people favorably. Vakasha, Rabbi Feldman.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kelman, and it's a pleasure to be here as always, although I hate to disagree with you. I'm not sure if it's even easy in theory. It's certainly hard in practice, and the theory is also complicated, and there's a lot that's challenging about this crucially important principle, but we'll do our best, and hopefully you will judge me favorably if it's not as clear or as easy as we'd like it to be. But it is a very challenging topic. And also, just to be clear, as far as our agenda, we chose it based on consensus, and that'll continue to be our plan, hopefully, to try to pick the topics that seem most compelling at the moment. So we're still open for input on next week's session. But last week, we talked about the basic principles of interpersonal halacha, and the first specific topic that was selected was this topic, was the idea of dam l'chavzchus, which happens to be from this week's parsha, which is not saying so much because there's a lot in this week's parsha. It's not even just one parsha, but the second of this week's parshios, Parshas Kedoshim, has quite a wealth of material regarding our topics, and many, many psukim relevant to general interpersonal halacha appear in Parshas Kedoshim. So it's not such a hard task to find something from this week's Kriyas HaTorah that's relevant to our theme here. Even the pasuk V'ahavta l'rayecha kamocha is found in Parshas Kedoshim. So really anything that we would choose in our broader realm, in our broader area, would have connected to this week's parsha, but certainly that's the case for this pasuk. But just to also broaden it out a little bit, that the issue of dam l'chavzchus has a lot of overlap with themes of lashon hara. And lashon hara, we could talk lashon hara forever. There's a lot of lashon hara to say. There's a lot that is required to understand and to explore about the theme of lashon hara. And of course, we're surrounded by lashon hara because that also is a directive in Parshas Kedoshim. And it's also the subtext in what we read this past Shabbos in Tazria Mitzara. Lashon hara is not explicit, but it is the subtext, the idea that all of the maladies that we read about yesterday morning are the result of speaking lashon hara, and the connection between that issue and dam l'chavzchus is a very strong one. So there'll be some overlap, and maybe we'll also find time to explore in greater detail the other issues that are contained within the subject of lashon hara. But first, let's try to focus on this idea specifically of dam l'chavzchus. So where exactly does this come from? So on the surface, this seems to be a Torah directive, because the pasuk tells us in Parshas Kedoshim that b'tzedek tishbot amisecha, that you should judge your fellow, you should judge your friend b'tzedek, in righteousness. Now, that phrase is somewhat vague, and the truth is it yields a number of interpretations. And in Chazal, in various places, we actually find at least three different interpretations as to what this pasuk could mean. And it's really three different audiences, that each interpretation is tailored to a different listener. So the most well-known interpretation is our subject for today, the way the Chazal express it in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and also Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, that they express this idea of Havidan es Chavercha l'chavzchus, Havidan es Kol Adam l'chavzchus, that you should judge others favorably, with a balance of favor. So that idea is the most well-known of the interpretations of Tzadik Tishbo Tam Yisachar. What are the other two interpretations? So one is addressed not just to the average individual, but is addressed to Dayanim, to rabbinic court judges. I think somebody asked the question last week, how much of Pirkei Avos is directed specifically at Dayanim? Here, in this case, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos expressing this idea, and some indeed understand that there is a particular reference to Dayanim in the Pasuk of Tzadik Tishbo Tam Yisachar. So the Gemara in Masechet Shavuos and Daf Lamed has a number of interpretations that are all about making sure that if you are in a judicial position, if you are sitting in judgment of others, of one against the other, of litigants, you have to make sure that you are treating them equally and you are treating them fairly, so that you are giving each one equal time to speak and you're not intimidating one over the other and you're not creating any kind of environment where one feels that they don't really have a fair shake, which will result in them not necessarily being able to express themselves properly. So there's tremendous pressure placed on the shoulders of a dayan to make sure that he's really creating an environment of fairness. So that's another understanding of this pasuk, b'tzedek tishbo tam yisachar, that when you are judging people, when you are involved in overseeing litigation, do so b'tzedek, do so with justice, and do not favor one side or the other, or even create the appearance of favoring one side or the other, which will end up having that impact. So that's the second audience. The third audience is not necessarily actual sitting judges, but is potential judges, that sometimes you have a scenario where there isn't anyone who is stepping in to help people mediate their disputes. There isn't anyone who is doing what's necessary to make sure that justice is being applied. So therefore, the Torah instructs that if you are such a person, if you are capable, then get up and do it. B'tzedek, tishbo tam yisachar, get up and bring justice to the world and create these environments where there shall be indeed the practice of tzedek. So we have a pasuk which can be read three different ways. Either it's talking to potential judges, telling them to take on the role, or it's talking to actual judges, telling them to judge fairly, or it's talking to all of us and saying that every day in our lives, we are dayanim, we are judges, we engage with others in a way that puts us in a position of judging them and assessing them. And we have to do so b'tzedek, we have to do so towards the side of favor. So what exactly is the actual interpretation of this pasuk? Is one of them more important than the other? Are they all equally included in the pasuk? That sometimes happens, that we could have one verse that has multiple applications, or perhaps we can understand it as all an extension of one value, each one in a different realm. So that's subject to various positions. But we know that one way or another, this idea of Dam L'Chav Schus certainly emerges as an obligation. Either it is the primary interpretation of this verse, or it's one of many interpretations, or it is a rabbinic focus. One way or another, we have this obligation of judging others to the balance of favor. Okay, so far so good. Just a little background as far as the Torah text. Now, the question is, if we do assume that we have the obligation to judge others favorably, so then the big, big question, and part of why it's not even so easy in concept, is what does that mean practically? And there are aspects just of the idea that are very challenging. Because first of all, first and foremost, what I think worries many people when they hear about this is, what about the potential danger in doing so? That if you assume someone is righteous, if you assume someone is harmless, and indeed they are not, so then you could be putting yourself or others at risk. So there's no question that that has to be first and foremost a consideration that is not only balancing this, but sometimes is overriding it. And it could also kind of overwhelm the discussion. So we will hopefully maybe talk about that separately. But there's no question that when there is the potential of harm towards yourself or others, so then we also read in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo samod al dam reyacha, that we cannot stand by when there is potential risk to anyone of any degree in any area. So for now, let's just assume that's not what we are dealing with. We're not dealing with a situation of potential risk or harm. That is something that we'll have to eventually address, but so that it shouldn't overwhelm our focus right now, let's assume that that's not what is on the table. But separate from the potential for harm, so still judging favorably is challenging, because even if we're not worried about anyone getting hurt, even if we're not worried about ourselves or about anyone else, what about the simple question of plausibility? And so to impose a favorable interpretation on whatever we see, if that's indeed what we're talking about, so that's going to sometimes require us to do somersaults in our head that really strain any degree of plausibility. And is that actually what we're supposed to do? Is that actually what halacha requires, that we should really turn ourselves upside down and inside out in order to find a positive interpretation? So presumably not. There's an expression they used to say in Europe that you have to be dan l'chav schus, you don't have to be a fool. That essentially to interpret something in a way that is completely unbelievable, and of course, all the more so if it puts anyone at danger, but to take an interpretation that is completely out of the realm of believability doesn't seem like that's what we're obligated to do. Now, one thing that's important to say at the outset is that sometimes what we are able to believe requires a little bit of training, that sometimes we're pretty sure that we have the whole take on everything, and there's actually a lot that we're not appreciating. And this is an experience, I have to say, that even at my age and at stage of experience, I have this experience every day, that you think you know the whole picture about something, or you think that you're experienced enough that you can understand all the different possibilities, and you're always surprised by something. So yes, it's true that you don't have to go beyond the range of plausibility, but sometimes there's a lot more we could be doing with our generosity of spirit that just connects to the truth. Sometimes the truth really is a lot less sinister than we think. Sometimes there really are many mitigating factors that we're not necessarily aware of. So it's just important to appreciate that even if we say you don't have to turn yourself upside down and go inside out, but sometimes there's a lot more we could be doing as far as being just fair in our judgment. So that being said, so what exactly is the obligation? How far are we expected to go with this sense of judgment? So this was actually codified, that there were among the halachic writers those who set down principles in order to regulate dam l'chav schus. Among them in the medieval era, among the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yonah, in his work Shari Tshuva, it's one of the great ethical texts, one of the great Musar texts. So he laid down guidelines as far as this is concerned. And several hundred years later, in the previous century to us, the Chafetz Chaim, in his Sefer on the Laws of Lashon Hara, so he also laid out some guiding principles similar to those of Rabbeinu Yonah and expanding on them a little bit. So there are some codified principles about this, and looking at them, thinking about them a little bit is helpful. So there are different scenarios and different individuals, and of course, not everything is equal. So when we consider what we might be confronted with. So let's say, for example, you have a situation where you have somebody who is known to be righteous, somebody who has a very strong positive reputation, has always done the right thing, is a person of known proper behavior and of known commitment to justice, and has never been suspected otherwise, and does something that is 50-50. He does something that could be interpreted negatively, could also be interpreted positively. Maybe the odds aren't even 50-50. Maybe there's a greater chance of interpretation in a negative way. So does Dan Lachav Schutz apply in that case? So what would you think? If you have somebody who's known to be righteous and he does something, could be interpreted either way. So is there an obligation? Is there a relevance of Dan Lachav Schutz in that case? So the answer seems to be no. So that's not a situation of Dan Lachav Schutz. Why? We're probably thinking that it is. So the answer is because Dan Lachav Schutz doesn't even enter into that equation. Here you're talking about simple fairness. And it's simple justice that if somebody has always behaved properly, he has the right to his reputation. And you don't need a pasuk for that. We don't need a imperative of Betzedek Tishpot Amisecha, which presumably takes things at least one step further than you otherwise would go. So in a situation where somebody has a sterling reputation, simple fairness should be that we should continue to treat them with that understanding. So such a person should be judged favorably, not because of Dan Lachav Schutz, but because of simple logic. And I think, that's definitely a concept that's gotten lost today. There is a very quick rush to judgment as soon as any question mark pops up, and especially in the internet age where everyone has an opinion on everything and it has to be expressed immediately and no time can be allowed to process anything or to get the whole story. So there is a tendency to judge very, very quickly and some kind of feeling like it's important to judge very, very quickly. And this principle gets forgotten. So here, not only should the individual be judged favorably, but it's not even a part of the mitzvah. It comes from plain logic. And that's certainly the understanding in that case. And in fact, the Talmud says in Maseches Brachos that if somebody is established as righteous, or the Gemara specifically talks about a Torah scholar, so then even if you see that they actually did something clearly wrong, still, the assumption should be that they did tshuva, that they repented, because that is a part of their general pattern and mindset, that they're going to be focused on trying to do the right thing. And therefore, just as when we don't know whether something was positive or negative, so the presumption is in such a person that they're behaving properly, so too, even when we know a little bit more about the action that it was negative, there is a presumption, unless we know more, that they would have repented. And again, I feel like I have to keep emphasizing again, it shouldn't be forgotten. We're not talking about any kind of a situation that constitutes a danger to anyone else that's guided by a whole different set of rules. We're talking about things here that don't involve such issues of concern. So that's before you get to the halacha of Dan Lachav Schutz. Let's say you have somebody who is not necessarily as outstanding of reputation as what we were just talking about somebody who is more average. So talking about somebody who generally tries to do the right thing, but you know, everyone has their ups and downs. And they do something that we don't know. Again, it's 50-50, could go either way. So there, that's more where we have this added impact of a mitzvah of Dan L'Chavzlus. Okay, so then it could have really been a total deadlock as far as what's the more likely interpretation. The power of reputation is not as strong in this case, but could go either way. So that's where the Torah is telling us that the default, that the premise is schos, that the premise is that we should assume innocence. Now, if you have a circumstance where it really seems that the behavior was improper, so then that gets more complex. And on the surface, we don't have an obligation of dam l'chavzchus. Now, as we'll try to discuss, we'll try to explore that it doesn't mean that there's no role for it at all, but that you have the right, again, not to be completely anti-intellectual or anti-rational and to assume that something that looks terrible is necessarily good when the elements that you have are overwhelmingly in a negative direction. So then the obligation of Dan L'Chavzchus presumably doesn't apply. There's a lot more to say to that, and we'll have to qualify that from both directions, time permitting, as we go on. But on the surface, that's not a circumstance where you have a Dan L'Chavzchus obligation. And of course, as we'll also see, when we talk about Dan L'Chavzchus, that we're talking about two different aspects. We're talking about the behavior that you are focusing on, and we're also talking about the individual and their relationship to the behavior and their character overall. And that's something also that will emerge as we talk a little bit further. Thank you. I see people are putting questions in chat. So as we know, I don't have always the ability to read them while we're talking. Hopefully we'll have time at the end and I'll be able to look at the chats, but keep them coming and just understand that I haven't necessarily had a chance to read them yet. Okay. So when you have somebody who is of poor reputation, and they do something that really we have no reason to assume is any better than their normal behavior. So then, once even more so, it would seem that that's not a situation of Dam L'Chavzchus as an obligation for sure. However, there's still a question to be asked. Assuming that we're not putting anyone at risk, assuming that there isn't any danger involved, let's say in this last category, for example, you have somebody who has not such a great reputation and is doing something which very likely is simply consistent with their past non-sterling reputation. Everyone agrees there's no obligation of Dan L'Chavzchus. And in order to try to put a positive spin, you're intellect will have to run on overtime to try to interpret it positively. In such a situation, granted that you're not obligated, WWCCD, what would the Chafetz Chaim do? So if you aspire to a very high level of accomplishment in the area of Dan L'Chavzchus and interpersonal characteristics and Lashon Hara and the like, is there even a value? Would you say, okay, listen, the average person, no obligation to interpret this in a favorable manner. It's not reasonable. It's not expected. It's not something that the average person would find within their capacity to do. But let's say you don't want to be the average person. You want to be somebody who is above average in this area. You want to be somebody who really is accomplished in the interpersonal realm and in the mitzvah of Dan L'Chavzchus. So is there a goal even? Is there an aspiration that you would be able to interpret favorably even when all the cards are stacked against it, even when all the elements push in a different direction? Is there any advantage to bringing an attitude of Dan L'Chavzchus to that? Again, assuming that there would be no danger or risk involved in doing so. So that was actually a debate among the Rishonim. there were those who said there's no aspect of Dan Lachav Schus here at all. It's not an obligation and it's not even a value. While there were others who said, you know, it is still something to strive for. When we say that it's not an obligation, we mean it's not something we can reasonably ask of people. But if you find that it's something you can push yourself to do, so then there is a value to it. So what is behind that debate? Why is there an argument about this? So I think the question really revolves around the issue of what is Dan Lachav Schus there for? What is the goal of this mitzvah? What's it meant to accomplish? So there are at least two ways that you can understand it. One is that Dan Lachav Schus is essentially a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveru. It's an interpersonal value, and it's something that we do for the sake of the other. The Maharshal understands, who's a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch, understands that we extend favorable judgment because that's a part of what keeps society in harmony. Right? We know that people get very resentful and defensive if others suspect them, and it's something that people feel is very hurtful and can do. I'm sure we all know stories about how unjust suspicion of other people has completely torn a society apart or a family apart or a community apart. There's no question that as far as interpersonal relationships and harmony, extending favorable judgment has a major impact and suspicion has a major negative impact. So one way to understand this is that it's a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro that both preserves social harmony and is in the spirit of Yahavta l'reicha kamocha, that just as you would want that people should judge you favorably, so too it makes sense that that's how you should treat others. And indeed, one of the great Rishonim, the Sefer Yireim, understands that this idea of not judging others badly is also associated with the prohibition, also in Parshas Kedoshim, of not hating others in your heart, and a parallel to the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. And one of the great later commentaries, the Haksava HaKabbalah, has an interpretation that we'll probably come back to because it'll be relevant in many other contexts. Then we say the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, that you should love your friend as yourself. So there's a lot to try to figure out. What does that mean, as yourself? It's also an idea that's not easy in practice or in theory, because what does it mean to love someone else as yourself, to the same degree as yourself? And here the Haksava HaKabbalah, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, suggests that it means that when it comes to someone else, so we can be very harsh in judgment and assessing the facts of a situation. But if we're in that same situation, we can always find a way to interpret it positively. So he suggests that it means v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, that just like you love yourself so much that you can find a positive way to spin whatever it is that you do, so you could extend that same spirit to others. There is a notion, it's called the fundamental attribution error, that characterizes the idea that when we try to interpret somebody else's behavior, so we often take whatever we perceive as reflective of their entire character. Whatever it is we're looking at, that represents who they are. While if I'm in the same situation, so I see it as more circumstance defined, just because whatever is going on, it's not who I am. So if I see somebody push in front of people on a line, so that person is a jerk, he's obnoxious, he's disrespectful. If I push in front of people on a line, listen, and I'm in a big rush and I have something important to do and I'm having a bad day, and I'm a good guy who's pushing in front of people in line because it's an emergency. If he's pushing in front of people in line, it's because he's a jerk. So that's what is reflected by the, they call it the fundamental attribution error, the idea that everyone else's behavior is characteristic of everything about them, while my behavior in the exact same situation is not reflective of me, who I am. It's just reflective of whatever is going on at the moment. So the Ksava Kabbalah says, you have to l'recha kamocha, the same way you love yourself. So you're able to interpret your actions with generosity. So too, you could extend that same generosity to others. So there are those who understand that that's what Dam L'Chaschus is about. It's about V'yahavt L'Recha Kamocha. It's about social harmony. It's about avoiding Lo Sisnas Achicha B'Vavecha. Don't hate others in your heart. All of this cluster of ideas is related to Dam L'Chaschus. But there is another interpretation also, which really puts it in a different realm. And this you could find in the writings of the Maharil Diskin, Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, who was known as the Brisker Rav before the Soloveitchiks, in the early settlements in the land of Israel in the late 1800s. I just actually learned that my great-great-grandfather was a student of the Maharil Diskin. So the Maharil Diskin has in his responsa, he has a brief explanation of a different angle on Dam L'Chaschus. And he understands it essentially to connect to positive peer pressure, that people feel a obligation to conform to what they believe is the standard around them. So if they believe that the baseline of behavior, that people around them are generally good people who try to be honest and try to be charitable and try to be friendly and try to do the right thing, so then they will feel that they also have to strive for that. But if their perception is that, oh, everyone around me is dishonest and everyone around me is just looking out for themselves and everyone around me is not doing much to try to be a good person, so then they also will not feel that this is something that they have to push themselves to do. So for that purpose, says the Torah, as the Maharil Diskin understood it, that b'tzedek tishbot amisacha, that your friend, your fellow, your neighbor, you should assume that they are striving for a high standard in life, whether or not they always succeed, but at least that's what they are looking for. And that is something that we should strive for as well. And in the same spirit, so the Meiri, who is one of the Rishonim, but his writings were often only discovered later, so sometimes he says things that the later sources also say, but they didn't know about it. So the Meiri has a similar understanding. The Meiri wrote that somebody who does not extend generous judgment to people around him in general will simply lose respect for society. And he's not going to be able to be influenced positively by society because he has such a negative and perhaps a cynical spin on how they behave. So this is in the same spirit of what Maharal Diskin says, that the idea of being Dam L'Chaschus in that sense is not so much a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, really. It's not something that we're doing for others. It's something that we do for ourselves so that we should be able to hold ourselves to a higher standard because we believe that that's what's happening overall. And that also would impact the point that we'll talk about a little bit more, you know, the question of, if you don't see this as necessarily a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, so there are a number of ramifications that we'll try to talk about in the next few minutes, but one of the major ones that emerges from these two understandings is how much is it up to the victim, so to speak, the person who's being judged. So let's say this person doesn't care how they're being perceived. So does that impact our obligation to judge them favorably? Or is it really not about them? is it really about society as a whole? And it's not up to any individual to say, well, I don't care what you think about me. It's the responsibility of the judger to do what they can to believe that society is working towards goodness, to the extent that it's a plausible interpretation. And it's also the responsibility of the judgee. It's the responsibility of the one being judged to try to not act in a suspicious way and to try to carry themselves in a manner that will not provoke suspicion or negative interpretation. There is a story that's related about the Chafetz Chaim. This, but the story by its very nature is not in the book Chafetz Chaim because it's all about the post-publication phase, but it is recorded in a number of other books that the Chafetz Chaim, after he wrote his book on the laws of not disparaging others, so he went on the publicity tour that authors go on. He was going on all the morning shows and he was going around the country trying to promote this concept, not because he wanted to sell books for his own sake, but because this was his whole mission to teach people about this. So one time he was in a carriage. He was in a transport that was taking him to whatever city to speak. And he didn't identify who he was. So he said that he was on his way to, say, Toronto to visit that day. And the wagon driver said to him, oh, you picked a good day to visit Toronto. It happens to be that the holy Chafetz Chaim is speaking today. So the Chafetz Chaim wanted to be modest. So he said, here he's not so great. So the driver was so incensed that this nameless passenger would be disrespectful to the holy Chafetz Chaim. He couldn't tolerate any such umbrage to the Chafetz Chaim in his wagon. So he chucked the Chafetz Chaim out of his wagon. So the story, as it goes, is that the Chafetz Chaim said after that, that he learned from this story that you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara even about yourself, that you think it's only a problem speaking about others. Even about yourself, you shouldn't speak in a negative fashion. And it's related that when Rav Soloveitchik heard that story, that he responded that I don't need that story. I know that already from the Torah, because the Torah tells us the v'yisum nikiyim, that you should strive to maintain a clean reputation. And the whole discussion, what exactly is behind that idea of a clean reputation. But a part of it is that you have a responsibility not only to yourself, but to society as a whole. So it's one thing if you think, well, I don't care what people think of me, it doesn't matter. So the halacha says it does matter that you play a role in maintaining a standard for society. And even if you know between you and God, you're doing the right thing. So that's certainly the first priority. Most important is to do what's right between you and God, even if people don't perceive it that way. But it is also important that it, yes, be perceived that way. It's important that the perception be positive as well, because it has an impact on how society regulates itself and where it sets its benchmarks. So that's a crucially important point. And as far as Dam L'Chatzchus is concerned, so it goes to this question, why are we engaging in this kind of positive judgment? Is it as a chesed to the judgee? Is it something we're doing so that they will coexist harmoniously with us? Or is it something that we do for the sake of society and it doesn't even matter whether they care or not? So this could have ramifications in a number of other ways. So first of all, one question to ask is this obligation of Dam L'Chatzchus, is it about thought? Is this a thought regulation? Or is it about behavior? Are we saying that you should treat people as if you judge them favorably, but we don't really care about what you are thinking as long as it doesn't express itself? Or are we saying more than that, that this is actually something that addresses how you think? So that actually could be affected by a number of considerations, but it also seems to connect to this question, that if it's about not disrupting society and not creating a disharmony, so then really it's all about your behavior. How do you treat the other people? whatever you happen to be thinking about them doesn't necessarily matter as long as it doesn't come across, as long as you treat them still in a pleasant fashion. But if the idea is that it's about setting a standard for yourself and believing that society as a whole is striving to be good, and you should as well, so then it's not just about what is expressed, it's also about how you think. And again, that's going to be bounded by what's rationally possible. You have limited concern, you have limited control over your thought process, but not zero control. Maybe that's something we'll have the opportunity to talk about a little bit more. And therefore, that would be relevant to this as well. It's also a discussion some of the Sfarim have. What if the person who you are judging is not alive anymore? So they're not necessarily around. It's related to the question of what's expressed. If they're not going to be impacted, they're not going to be able to get upset at your judgment of them because they're not there to experience it, to know about it. Does that matter? Or do we say, again, it's not about them, but it's about your own push to adhere to a higher standard, in which case that would make more of a difference. Now, this also goes to the question of how far do you have to extend yourself and how much gymnastics do you have to do in order to fulfill this. So this idea of WWCCD, what would the Chafetz Chaim do? So even in circumstances where you're not obligated, where the facts really make it difficult, so is there still a value of doing this? So that also has two different directions to consider it from. So on the one hand, again, emphasizing that there must be no harm or risk involved for anyone else. So if you are able to put a positive spin with great creativity and open-mindedness, so it would seem like that has value really from both perspectives, that it is something that people appreciate and therefore you will make a positive contribution to harmony. And also you'll preserve for yourself the belief that there is a general desire to do good and to commit in that direction. And you will hopefully also preserve that attitude for your own goals. But there's also other aspects of it that push in a different direction. So if you have somebody who really seems to have a negative direction in life, a negative reputation, and engages in behavior that is unsavory and questionable, so then maybe, yes, if you extend generosity of judgment, you will do even more to create a harmonious society, and maybe you'll be able to impact favorably on this person, and that's something which has tremendous value. But as far as societal standards, it would seem like that would push in a different direction, because the Mariel Diskin's idea that you want to believe that the baseline person, that the average person in society, is striving for something good, so you will push yourself that way as well. So that's true about somebody who is the average member of society. But if somebody is known to be of negative character, so then there could be a danger in taking too generous of an attitude to what they do, because once we already perceive them as somebody whose behavior is not so admirable, so then the risk is that you'll come to imitate this non-admirable behavior. So then that becomes something that one really wouldn't want to do. And the question of WWCCD might be that he would not extend generous judgment in such circumstance. Okay, so those are some ramifications that address this basic question of what it's about. There are a couple of other ramifications also. For example, what if we're talking about something that's not necessarily about righteousness and it's not necessarily about social standards, but it's something that really is more just about how it impacts our relations? So, for example, let's say you invite somebody to your party And he says, oh, I can't come. So you can interpret that as he just doesn't care about you, or you can interpret it that he really has some pressing issue in his life that doesn't allow him to come. So it's not really about tzedek and social standards there. It's not really about righteousness. But as far as relationships, so being able to take the less offensive interpretation would impact how you relate. So if the goal is harmonious relationships and you have tlorecha kamocha, so then it would extend even to things that are outside the moral realm. But if it's more about social standards, so then it wouldn't necessarily extend to things such as that. There are other such ramifications. What if you're looking at a certain action and it's not associated with any one individual? You don't know who it is who did it, but the question is just how to interpret the action in of itself. So there, you're not harming anyone by taking a negative interpretation. You don't know who it is who's connected with it. But as far as social standards, so then that may indeed have a negative impact. So that also becomes relevant to this question of trying to understand what exactly is the goal and what exactly is the intention of being down l'chavtzchutz. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner noted in his Pachad Yitzchak that the Gemara has a statement that if somebody is choshed b'ksherim, if somebody is suspicious of other people, so then he, and unjustly, unfairly, somebody has suspicion about someone, he has to ask their forgiveness. So one could ask, why do I need to be told that? We know that overall, there's an obligation that if I hurt someone else, I have to ask their forgiveness. So what might be the lesson there is that you might think that this isn't something that actually has an impact on anyone else. It's just a question of how you think and how you relate to others' activities, but it's not an actual offense against that person. So perhaps the message is that that's not true, that that is something that actually has an impact on them and is subject to this requirement of mechila. I know that I'm not leaving that much time for questions again, so let me just try to say one more point. And there is actually a lot more to get into in terms of the implications for the laws of Lashon Hara and like, and we didn't get into so much the issue of what happens when there is potential risk and harm, which radically redefines the whole situation. But let me just share one more idea, and then hopefully we'll have a few minutes for questions, and I'll take Rabbi Kelman's direction about how to allot the time. But it's important to appreciate that there is a interpretation of the Mishnah which is very, very significant. It's really a homiletic interpretation, but it's actually a practical interpretation. And many, many commentaries on the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos all hit upon the same idea. And it's something that's definitely worth paying attention to, that the language of the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos that says that you should judge others favorably, the language is, have you done as kol ha'adam l'chafschus, that you should judge, you would have thought it'd be translated as you should judge every person favorably, but the language of kol ha'adam actually sounds like you should judge all of the person favorably. And many, many interpretations, many, many commentaries on Pirkei Avos all understand it the same way, that the message of the Mishnah is that sometimes you will look at a certain action and there really is no way to interpret it positively. It's just very open and shut. And whatever you saw was definitely the wrong thing, and there's no other way to see it. However, as far as your judgment of the individual, of the person who perpetrated this action, like we said before, and the issues of the fundamental attribution error, and the question of whether you see this one episode as reflective of their entire character, so then you have to appreciate and understand that there is so much more to a person, and that the idea of the totality of the individual should be front and center. So whatever can be said about this particular episode might be limited. It might be that there's no plausible or rational way to see it other than what it is. But as far as judgment of the individual, so that takes things to a different plane. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his commentary, added another step that if you look at the whole context of that Mishnah, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where this appears, so there actually are three statements, and the three statements are Knei Lecha Chaver, so sometimes translated buy a friend, acquire a friend, do whatever it takes to have a friend, V'yaseh Lecha Rav, and make for yourself a Rebbe, a teacher, V'havidan is kol ha'adam l'chavschus, and judge everyone with a spirit of generosity. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe noted that there's a one coherent message with all these three statements, that you have to appreciate that people are the product of their environment and of their education, and that has a tremendous impact on their behavior. So first, Knei Lecha Chaver, make sure that you have good influences in your social circle. Make sure that you surround yourself with people who are pushing to grow and to act positively as forces of goodness in the world. And Aseh Lecha Rav, and find for yourself a teacher, a moral guide, who will also push you in a positive direction. And understand that everyone is affected by these elements. Havidanas kol adam l'chavschus, understand that the social influences and the educational influences make a huge difference. And that's also something to factor in. And indeed, la halacha, some great halachic authorities, in terms of practical application of this Mishnah, understand that we say Avidam l'chavschus, it does not necessarily address only the action in front of you, but every other mitigating factor and every other positive element that's a part of the equation is all a part of what we talk about regarding being dam l'chavschus. And I'll just add one other note, that the Gemara says that anyone who judges others favorably, he will also be judged favorably in heaven. And the Maharal of Prague and others explain that it's not simple reciprocity, but that it has to do with our ability to appreciate divine justice, that God is going to judge us in a way that is comprehensible to us, ideally. Obviously, that's saying a lot, but that theoretically, the goal is that we should be able to relate and to comprehend divine justice. So if we have an attitude that is very unforgiving, and that we don't see any room to see others favorably, so then God cannot be generous with us, so to speak, because it'll seem to us like it's a meaningless system. It'll seem to us like there just simply are no standards. But if we do have standards, but at the same time, we're able to extend generosity of spirit to others, so then it's a meaningful system. Then it's something we can understand and appreciate. And then there's room for God to evaluate us the same way, and it will be understood and accepted by us as a part of the rubric of justice as well. So that's a big part of what we strive for. And I know I've only left a few minutes left, so Rabbi Kelman, please guide us.
Okay, thank you. No, you can answer the question. You want me to read you the questions?
If you can, I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance.
Sure, no, I got you. Okay. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Lashon Hara sometimes uses a weapon, and the truth and safety of all community leaders want to suppress. Okay, that's a comment. Maybe we'll get back to that. Okay, people, other comments. How would halachic credit scoring systems and hiring? Okay, hold on. I don't understand the question. I'm sorry. iPad. Dan Lekavskut. How would a halachic credit scoring system, prompt bill payments or not, payback credit on hiring, especially references, tourist cards, good neighbors may still be bad risk, means found behind closed doors. What would such a system look like? I assume the question is, and this relates to Lashon Hara, you asked for a reference. All these things were, you know, it's very nice, but like I'm hiring somebody I need. Don't give me, you know, Dablikanskut. What's the reality?
Yeah, so this whole element we didn't even get to even address yet. So I wonder, Bike, how much should that be next week's topic about the balance, the Toelis balance, we call it in Hilchos Lashon Hara, and how exactly we weigh one against the other?
I'm fine with that. Oh, there are a couple other suggestions. We can talk about that afterwards, or people
okay,
can throw
in. Okay, it deserves a lot of head-on attention, because it's not a simple issue at all.
Okay, we'll leave that for now. Okay, David Eisen from Beit Shemesh pointing out a cute thing. his cynical high school rebbe said that the girsa is not that he's badai asa tshuva. I assume you had the same cynical high school rebbe.
I didn't have
that rebbe.
But I interpret that non-cynically. You know, the idea being that the language of the Gemara is, if you see the Talmud Chacham does a vera al tahar acher b'yom, you shouldn't suspect him the next day. Shema asa tshuva. Maybe he did tshuva. And then the Gemara says, Shema asa tshuva, alavade asa tshuva. He definitely did tshuva. So I used to hear this from my father, who was far from cynical, but I quoted this idea also that means vade asa tshuva. He definitely wrote a tshuva saying it was permitted. So you could take that cynically, or we could take that as also aspirational, that hopefully everyone at least tries to find the framing of their own actions that makes it justifiable. And we could also try to pursue that and try to see what it is, which is itself something to keep in mind, both the kula and the chumra, you know, that basically very few people do things that they themselves do not find to be justifiable. And that there usually is some approach, vade asa tshuva, somebody, everybody could write a explanation of why what they do is proper. And that has implications in both directions, that both in terms of dam v'chav schus, that we can try to tap into that and try to figure out what the justification is and see how much it's something that we can relate to. But it's also something that we have to be wary of, because clearly there is still bad behavior in the world, despite the fact that everyone can justify what they do. And so therefore we have to be even more sensitive to what might be unjust rationalizations and the fact that they clearly exist. And that the mentality that we sometimes have, which is a whole other discussion, that the only thing we care about is whether a person is consistent to their own standards, I think it's a very misguided goal, that the first question is, are the standards correct? And then we strive to live up to the standards. But the idea that all we care about is whatever people hold for themselves they should live up to, I think it's actually a misguided concern. So here, this cuts in both directions, that whatever the justification is, it might be valuable for us to try to tap into that and see if it's something we can incorporate into our generous judgment. But also the fact that everyone can write for themselves the tshuva is something to be wary of and to recognize that that's not the end of the story.
Okay, and perhaps last question, very important question, applying this principle vis-a-vis non-Jews and the potential contradiction, but does it apply to non-Jews?
So, you know, that it's a complex question, and maybe we'll also get into that a little bit in the area of Lashon Hara. So you have to, in general, have a nuanced understanding of what we're talking about. So we're talking, to whatever extent we're talking about basic fairness. So basic fairness should be applied to everyone, and to whatever extent that's what we're talking about. So it's important to keep that in mind and to try to allow that to guide your behavior really with everyone. And that's something that's also going to come up if we get into the details of Lashon Hara as well. Now, when there is a certain presumption, so it's not really fair to talk categorically. So the average person who you don't know what their connections are, what their values are, so then it's not fair to say there should be a judgment of schus if we have no knowledge of them at all. But when they at least have a stated association with a value system, so doesn't mean exclusively Jews, but it may depend on whatever system we're talking about, that also plays a role in the judgment, and that's also something which legitimately contributes to how this process plays out. That's a kind of a brief answer, a lot more to say about that, but that's just a little bit of a opening approach.
All right, just to let you know, we can discuss, but the two requests that were sent to me about what future subjects was one unrelated really to this, about endangering one's health to save the life of, I guess, a fellow Jew and a non-Jew. Donations, organ donations, et cetera, there's many ideas. One on Also from this week's Parsha, of course, rebuking one's person. And I guess that could also apply to non-Jews, etc. So, okay, we can discuss what we want to do. There's a lot to do. Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is a broad field. We won't get to everything, but, it's really Rabbi Feldman can give on any of these topics and more. So just let us know and we'll run a democracy here and the most votes wins. Okay. Otherwise, we'll choose on our own, which often is the best system.
Yes.
I may say that. People, we just tell them this is what we're doing. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Just let everybody know, 15 minutes, Rabbi Liebtag will be on the same Zoom channel. Everybody's welcome to preparing for Har Sinai, climbing Mount Sinai, preparation, Rabbi Feldman. Have a wonderful week. All the best. And okay, we'll take a little bit of a break and we'll see you. You don't have to go anywhere. You can turn off your camera, go for a walk. If maybe in Canada, not so simple in Ontario anymore, but whatever, in your backyard, you can go for a walk, and we'll see you all soon, please God. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.